Welcome to Maine's Political Pulse. I'm Erwin Gratz, and this will wrap up our first season of The Pulse. We have plenty to talk about with you. Joining me is Maine Public's Statehouse Bureau Chief Steve Missler and Chief Political Correspondent Mal Leary. Gentlemen, welcome.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, let's begin with the additional Democrats who have declared their intention to run in next year's U.S. Senate race. Steve, who is in?
Well, we have three so far. One is Bree Kidman, an attorney from Saco, who got into the race fairly early and is probably the least known of the three candidates. Betsy Sweet, who is a lobbyist here in Augusta, who also finished third in the Democratic gubernatorial primary last year, which is a bit of a surprise, but may be attributed to the ranked choice voting that was used. And then, of course, House Speaker Sarah Gideon, who got in shortly after the legislature adjourned, and she announced her candidacy on Monday, which was not a surprise. It was long rumored that she was going to get in, and now she's finally in.
I know Democrats think that Susan Collins, the Republican incumbent, may be vulnerable, partly due to her vote for Supreme Court Justice Brett Kavanaugh. Is this going to encourage more Democratic candidates to get in the race to challenge Collins?
Well, if it were only that simple, what's happening, it's really interesting to sort of watch this, but shortly after Sarah Gideon got into the race, we saw a really extraordinary effort by national Democrats, frankly, to either clear the field, even though that's not technically happening, or at least demonstrate a real show of force. So shortly after she got into the race, there were all these endorsements from Emily's List, which is a pro-choice group, prominent, spends a ton of money to help elect women candidates across the country. They came out and endorsed Sarah Gideon right off the bat. So did NARAL, a pro-choice group, an abortion rights group, and the Democratic Campaign Committee, which is the arm of the Democratic Party that is controlled by Chuck Schumer, the current minority leader. They all came out and endorsed Sarah Gideon right off the bat, which is unusual because there's other candidates in the race, including last year's third place finisher in the gubernatorial primary, Betsy Sweet. And it's interesting to have watched that because it's really created a bit of a split in the Democrats here in Maine. There's a lot of activists who want a competitive primary and are not necessarily appreciative of this effort to sort of, you know, close out the field so early. And then there are others who are fine with that and you know, are sort of consolidating support behind Sarah Gideon. But it'll be interesting to see how that plays out going forward, because in other cases where the national party has intervened in a primary, it's not always gone so well. And you can go back to last year and
check
that
out. That's an understatement.
Yeah, exactly.
You got to realize here that Democrats in Maine are a very independent bunch. Look at their votes for Angus King as an independent. Look at the fact of how many of them split their ticket, as they say, as we say, you know, voting for a Democrat for one race but a Republican on another. They don't like this top-down stuff. They want to have some grassroots efforts. And I think that the effort to try to clear the field, so to speak, is going to backfire. And you'll see a few other candidates, but you're also going to see some folks that are going to be upset at that effort. So yeah, it's going to be very interesting as we go forward. And what we also have to talk about here is the other party, where Susan Collins is expecting to have a couple of opponents in the primary, which may help her. If she has someone that's a Donald Trump supporter on the far right and she wins the primary big, that is really going to help her in a fall election, no matter who the Democrats nominate. So there's a lot of moving parts to this contest.
If I could just add one thing about how this top-down approach isn't typically appreciated by the folks that are actually living here. I mean, one thing I heard from activists that were upset, I mean, some of them don't necessarily have a preference between Sarah Gideon and Betsy Sweet, who are the two best known candidates in the Democratic primary. What they object to is that there isn't going to be a competition. And they also object to this idea that they might not be heard during the course of a primary, that their influence in getting a candidate to see and hear and potentially adopt their position may be diminished by the fact that Sarah Gideon has already received all these endorsements from these big national groups with a lot of money. And so they're worried that they're going, their voices will be drowned out in this process. And, you know, I think that's probably a legitimate concern on their part.
Is part of this a concern because we're beginning to see the kind of liberal moderate split in the Democratic Party here that we are seeing nationally that's reflected in the race for president next year?
We've always had that split in the main Democratic Party. Go way back years and years ago when Ed Muskie was running for president, there was a very strong insurgent effort for other candidates than him, even though he was the favorite son, the party favorite, and all of that. So this is nothing new, Irwin, in terms of the way the Democratic Party operates. They, in fact, like to say we have a big tent and, you know, everybody is welcome in the Democratic Party, but that doesn't mean they don't fight. It often comes out here at the legislature where you've got progressive bills that just don't go anywhere if they don't get the moderate Democrats to support them. Classic example there is our governor. Mm-hmm. You know, Janet Mills is far more moderate than a lot of these folks, and she won't support some of these ideas like raising taxes that some of the progressive Democrats want to do. The question is, how does the dynamic work when people go to the polling place for the first time in this presidential primary? Because we haven't had one for a long time.
Yeah, I think that split is interesting in the context of a campaign where, just take the example of the Senate race with Gideon and Sweet. I don't know that there's that much daylight between Gideon and Sweet at the end of the day in terms of the moderate and progressive. I mean, I think perhaps, you know, some people might think Betsy Sweet is more ideologically pure from a liberal standpoint. Maybe. I don't know. But one thing I will say is that split, you know who loves that? Republicans and Susan Collins. I mean, they are cheering this thing on with great glee. You could see it. I mean, national groups, Republican groups, are already paying very close attention to this race. They've been fueling and stoking this division and this potential conflict about clearing the field or attempts to do so. They love this. And why wouldn't they? This is a good thing for them because these two candidates are turning the guns on themselves or each other. They're not focusing on Susan Collins, who's the ultimate goal for them. And so that's another component here. And it'll be interesting to watch to see how that unfolds over the course of a year. Because let's not forget, the Democratic primary isn't until next June.
Yeah, this also kind of has interesting echoes, too, from the presidential race in 2016, when there was a lot of talk that the Democratic establishment was perhaps tilting the scales for Hillary Clinton against the insurgent Bernie Sanders. And I kind of wonder if that factors into this anywhere.
I think it does. I mean, I think those wounds still exist. They may have Band-Aids on them and some, you know, ace bandages, but that's it. I think, you know, there's always this concern that, you know, a national group or a wealthy donor, for example, is picking candidates and not letting, you know, actual voters and activists do that.
All right. Mal was mentioning Governor Mills just a little bit ago. She spent this past week signing more bills that were passed by the legislature. Mal, one of the highlights had to be the measure that is going to set the rules for the recreational marijuana market.
Finally. This has been around for a long time. I've kidded Steve more than one occasion calling him Pot Guy because he said so many stories dealing with these rules as they went through a very torturous process to be adopted, and then finally the legislature passing them. So, yeah, there's a lot of that going on. But what's more interesting to me than that one issue is the number of initiatives of Paul LePage that are being overturned by this Democratic-controlled legislature and signed into law by Janet Mills, some of them at Mills' request, some of the bills that she's put in, directly opposite to him, for example, the actual funding of Medicaid expansion, which he managed to hold up for over a year. There's a lot of that going on. We haven't seen all the bills yet. There may be some vetoes. We're still waiting to see whether there will be. The governor has, you know, stacks of bills on her desk that she's been going through, and as I said, many of them are to undo some of the policies adopted during the LePage years.
Yeah, so in terms of the marijuana rules, I mean, that is an example of what Mal was talking about. One of the reasons why it's taken so long to get these rules put in place is because Governor LePage effectively blocked them. He was not a supporter of marijuana legalization, at least in terms of adult use. He did sign into law a very permissive overhaul of the medical program. He was outspoken about against the adult use legalization. And so, I mean, that's why the Mills administration and the Marijuana Policy Office really had to rush out these rules, because there are other states, including Massachusetts, right next door, and Canada, that have already rolled out their programs. And so Maine is at a disadvantage in terms of creating its marketplace and getting set up. What's interesting about those rules, I'll just add this, is that there was some tension about the drafters' efforts to have residency requirements for people who hold retail licenses here or are cultivators here. There was some pushback from the state's largest dispensary, Wellness Connection. They basically threatened to sue the state, saying that this is prohibitive in terms of attracting out-of-state investors and potentially a violation of the U.S. Constitution. So at the end of the day, the legislature had to give in a little bit on that. So it'll be interesting to see how that residency requirement plays out. The drafters of that law really wanted Maine businesses to have a jump start in getting into this marketplace. And that was one of the reasons for the residency requirement. It'll be interesting to see if what happens, though, is if larger corporations from out of state, as they have in other states that have legalized, whether they slowly take over and they bring on what a lot of local activists here feared, the onset of big weed. And so, you know, that'll be something to watch as these rules are implemented and as licensing begins.
Speaking of bills that might be signed or vetoed, we've also learned that paperwork has been taken out on a couple of potential people's vetoes. Yeah. These is the opportunity to gather enough signatures to have measures from the legislature placed on the ballot for the public to vote down. The two measures in this case are the one that would require insurers and MaineCare to cover abortion payments. And the other one is the measure that broadens the reach of the vaccination law, eliminates the religious and philosophical exemptions. Do you get a sense that either of these are backed by groups that might seriously get them on the ballot?
Well, I think you have to always look at the difficulties of doing this. People's veto, they have 90 days from the adjournment of the legislature, which I believe is September 19th. And by September 19th, they've got to file enough petitions, signatures, valid signatures, to qualify. And that's 64,000 something. And that's a difficult task, particularly over the summer months and the fact that there are no elections by which to try to catch voters to sign your petitions. So it's a tough row to hoe, and I think that they know that. But that's not going to deter these folks, I think, because they are very, very they have a very strong philosophy, for example, on vaccinations or on abortion, and that's not going to change.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, it is interesting to sort of explore which of those two, if they are successful in getting a people's veto initiative, which of those two would be more likely, those two laws would be more likely to be overturned. I go back and forth on this. I get the sense that the vaccination, getting rid of those exemptions, might have a better chance of staying law than the potentially the taxpayer-funded abortions piece. Because while polling shows, you know, national polling shows that people are generally supportive of Roe versus Wade, the landmark law that legalized it in the states, their opinions on abortion are nuanced. They're more nuanced than just that. And so taxpayer-funded abortions is a very charged phrase that will be used by opponents, and they would probably, that might give them a little more ammunition in a campaign than, say, you know, getting rid of exemptions for vaccinations for school kids.
Well, thank you, gentlemen, for your time. As always, we appreciate it.
Thanks, Erwin.
That's Maine's Political Pulse. We're going to take a break during July and August. Of course, we can't guarantee the politicians will, but you'll be able to follow any developments on Maine Public Radio newscasts and online at mainepublic.org. Our website is just one of the places where you can download episodes of The Pulse, including our previous discussions. Now, when in season, The Pulse also airs on Maine Public Radio Sundays during Weekend Edition, and an excerpt from The Pulse airs Mondays on Morning Edition. Willis Ryder Arnold is the series producer. Music is by Rob Holt. I'm Erwin Gratz. Have a great summer. We'll talk again in September.